Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Thanks for joining us here on The Conversation, Hawaii Talks. It's Thursday, September 5th. We take a look at data related to the Maui wildfires on the heels of a congressional hearing in Lahaina yesterday. How many people have moved away in the wake of the disaster? Numbers vary across different agencies. We elevate the work of those who help poor immigrants get on their feet in this country. The Pacific Gateway Center celebrates 50 years with deep gratitude. How to get good at math fast? We hear from an academic coach working in our public schools to help our keiki. And love trees and got time on your hands? Well, the city's Foster Gardens is looking for a few good docents as it kickstarts its daily tours. Be a teller of tree stories.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Americans United for Separation of Church and State. For more than 75 years, AU has supported freedom without favor and equality without exception. Learn more at au.org/NPR.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. You know, we've been doing stories about good data this week, and good data is behind what can help make good policy. That was part of a conversation on Maui yesterday. A congressional subcommittee on oversight and accountability met at the Lahaina Civic Center. It looked at the federal government's response to the recent wildfires. On hand were officials from the Small Business Administration, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Hawaii U.S. Representatives Jill Takuda and Ed Case called for FEMA's funding to be replenished. They also questioned how organizations use data to inform their approach in the weeks and months following the disaster. The Conversation's Maddie Bender takes a closer look at some of that data.
In the year since the Maui wildfires, there are several devastating numbers that we've gotten used to hearing. $5.5 billion in damages, nearly 1,400 burned residential properties, 102 lives lost. Here's a number you may not have heard. 4,000. That's how many Maui residents have left the island since the fires, according to the University of Hawaii Economic Research Organization, UHERO. This number, known as outmigration, is being used to inform policy and make decisions. Decisions like how much housing should be converted from short-term rentals or built from scratch.
Our housing crisis stems from a myriad of complex issues that have challenged our community for decades.
That's Maui County Mayor Richard Bisson speaking in favor of a short-term rental ban at a June meeting for the Maui County Planning Commission.
Paired with the displacement of approximately 12,000 people and 5,400 households due to the Maui wildfires, this crisis has resulted in an estimated 4,000 residents already leaving Maui. This is a consequence we cannot and should not accept. Our system is broken and long overdue for change.
There's just one problem. That 4,000 number is wrong. And that's according to the people who are doing the counting. Carl Bonham, executive director of UHERO.
You know, the forecast is, take it with a whole handful of salt, because it's an informed estimate based on a bunch of different data points. But we don't have hard data on how many people have left the island.
So where does this number come from, and why is it wrong? The estimates used in policymaking today come from numbers tallied by FEMA and surveys conducted by UHERO and the Council for Native Hawaiian Advancement. Ultimately, because of incomplete data that only represent a fraction of those affected, some of the researchers I spoke with believe these estimates may massively undercount the true number of people who have left Maui. But the problem is, there's no good data to get us to a better number. I asked Bonham if UHERO had updated its forecast of 3,000 to 4,000 residents who'd left Maui.
We don't have any additional information that would cause us to change that forecast.
He says that the organization had used data from FEMA, the State Department of Education, and CNHA.
All of these data sources are problematic. None of them are sort of hard data on actual outflows of people. I mean, basically, right now, I would say we have almost no data. right? We have data sets that are measured with significant error, right? And so it's not just about the granularity. It's whether or not those sort of early, the faster data sets are giving you the wrong answer.
Decision makers working on recovery efforts are faced with a dilemma because these numbers matter. The outmigration estimate is influencing how much interim housing gets built by organizations like CNHA. Cujillo Lewis is the executive director.
I do think having good data, and CNHA made an early investment in data because we knew how critical it was to drive strategies, to drive programs. And so I think it's very important for us to have a very good idea of where people are. So we're building the right types of homes. So we're building the right amount of homes. So I think in the end, the more educated we are based on data, the better the decisions that we're making as leaders helping with recovery could be aligned to their needs.
And it's not just housing. Keeping track of residents who've left the Valley Isle is critical in efforts to study the long-term health effects of the fires, gauge the economic future of Maui, and help those who've slipped through the cracks. But Lewis says the estimates that CNHA is using are just that, informed guesses.
So what we know for a fact is that there are at least 1,500 families that have left their islands. And we believe that number is actually a lot higher, but we don't want to definitively say that.
CNHA's estimate is based on hundreds of responses from fire survivors. The organization asked them directly as part of its lease program and the Alaska Care Flights program.
Hundreds and hundreds of families signed up for that program. It was a good chance for us to ask a bunch of questions to see where they're at. So it's qualitative data too, and it's probably the most refreshed data than anybody has, because Red Cross data gets stale. FEMA data gets stale. So this programmatic data that we're collecting as we launch programs is one of the only sources of data right now available. So it's just a snapshot of what it looks like.
And what about that FEMA data? The organization has shared some of it with CNHA, UHERO, and Maui County. FEMA's Region 9 Administrator Bob Fenton walked me through their numbers. He says that out of the more than 4,000 households receiving aid from his organization, a little over 400 used an address in the continental United States in their application. Another 400 applied with an address on an island other than Maui. But he says those numbers are stale or out of date, and they leave much to be desired.
The only time that we get information from individuals affected by the disaster are those that applied to our program. And so if they applied to our program, and as part of that, they have to furnish their address, but it's the last address they use for when they apply to the program. So it doesn't, they don't have to change their address, throughout the process, or are required to update their address once they've applied for it. So therefore, I think what we have is maybe the last address they use for applying to assistance from FEMA. That does not cover everyone and only covers the last address they use.
Plus, these numbers don't take into account the thousands denied FEMA assistance, like those who were homeless at the time of the fires. Still, others are not included in FEMA's count because they didn't apply for aid, whether because of distrust or language barriers. The very people being left out of the count may be some of the most vulnerable and hardest hit. So 4,000, that's not the number of Maui residents who have left the island since last year's fires. But it's the benchmark that researchers came up with based on incomplete data. The problem is that this benchmark is being treated like a true count, and it's being used to shape the recovery effort already.
That was HPR's Maddie Bender. She will be following up with the second part of this story tomorrow. How we got into this situation, when we'll have better data, and how lawmakers want to fix this system going forward.
In China's Yunnan province, the Bai people have a tradition of communicating through singing. They have a song for everything, from history lessons to mourning to flirting. I'm Carolyn Beeler. We meet a Bai community leader and hear some of those songs, along with the latest headlines, next time on The World.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Aloha, this is Shankar Vedantam, host of Hidden Brain, here on Hawaii Public Radio. Listen to Hidden Brain at a new day and time, Sundays at 11 a.m. on HPR 1. Hidden Brain reveals unconscious patterns that drive human behavior, shape our choices, and direct our relationships. Hidden Brain, now on Sundays at 11 a.m. on HPR 1.
For 5 decades, the Pacific Gateway Center has been helping immigrants settle in this country. It plans to bring together many in our community to honor its past and to inspire its future. Tarina Wong is the Deputy Director of Social and Immigration Services. Her family's immigration story is what propels her to help others new to the U.S. She said her father came to this country, built a career in architecture, and worked on several famous buildings, including the Transamerica Pyramid Building in San Francisco, a symbol of strength and aspiration. Hao Nguyen hails from Vietnam, whose war sent the first wave of immigrants that became among the center's first clients. They joined us in the studio yesterday to talk about their humble beginnings and the genuine gratitude that spurs their work.
So we're celebrating our Pacific Gateway Center's Golden Gala, honoring the past to inspire the future. And for 50 years since our founding in 1973, we have had our steadfast purpose of empowering immigrants, refugees, human trafficking victims, and vulnerable populations towards self-sufficiency and towards rebuilding their lives really with dignity and respect as they resettle here in Hawaii. So we're planning a really, really wonderful event. It's going to be from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Japanese Cultural Center on South Barataria. And one of the features will be our marketplace, where we will feature our clients at the Culinary Business Incubator, and they will be selling their packaged goods. There would be cookies and mochi and all sorts of delicious things. And then we're also going to be featuring our farmers out in Kunia, and they will be having their fresh produce available. And this is what's going to be unique about our gala, in that this will allow our guests to interact directly with our clients and personally hear their stories.
And there are so many stories. I know we were just chatting about how the Vietnam War was really when we started to see a stream of immigrants come over to the islands here.
Right. So we are very fortunate that we still have the connection with those people who arrive in America and arrive in Hawaii since 1973, in 1970s, and then later on in 1980s. And Pacific Gateway Center, back to the old days, formed by 3 churches. So very spontaneous, they respond to the massive influx of immigrants from Vietnam, and I would say including Cambodia and Laos, that Indochina affected by the Vietnam War. And then it's very spontaneous, responses to that one, try to help them settle down, provide other services, like shelter, food, clothing. But then later on, Pacific Gateway Center, thanks to that foundation of the 3 churches and the one person that we didn't have a chance to mention, Miss Mary Lee Ho, she's a visionary, that dedicated herself to support those refugees. And some of the Vietnamese right now still remember that the lady, say by her last name, Miss Ho, arranged transportation and food for them when they arrive in Hawaii.
Yes, she was very, very visionary, Mary Lee Ho. In fact, she was doing refugee resettlement services even before the Refugee Act of 1980, because she realized the importance of delivering services, social services in particular, to refugees who arrive to Honolulu, who will take care of their core services, their housing, their transportation, their food, their clothing. And so it was her care and compassion. She was with the Honolulu Refugee Resettlement Office. And so she, with the staff, serviced the refugees who came, especially from Vietnam. And we actually have the original sign that was done in by hand with that says Refugee Resettlement Services. And so we're very anxious to be able to honor her for her vision and for her commitment to Refugee Resettlement Services. So we'll be honoring Mary Lee Ho as well as our three founding churches, as Hal mentioned, Aldersgate Methodist, Kamakapili Church, and St. Elizabeth's Episcopal Church.
Yes, and they just opened their doors, opened their hearts because there was a need.
Yeah. It was a wonderful, we tied back to that, back to the gate.